السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله وحده والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، ونشهد أن سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمدا عبده ورسوله. قال النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم: الحج المبرور ليس له جزاء إلا الجنة، أو كما قال عليه الصلاة والسلام. علماء الكرام، most respected brothers and also our sisters who listen over receivers, a fortnight ago we were discussing some aspects of Medina Sharif, and I mentioned that it is not possible to discuss all the fazail, the virtues of Hajj and the masail of Hajj in the Jummah Bayans. There are lots of seminars, lots of programs that are taking place and have taken place where all these things are discussed in detail. But just one or two things we do mention, so that those who are going may be encouraged to spend their time correctly there and get those rewards which Allah Ta'ala has promised. And those on whom Hajj has become farz, then they get encouraged to undertake this pilgrimage, which is a duty upon every Muslim who has sufficient amount of wealth to undertake the pilgrimage to fulfill this obligation. Of course, all the other conditions, masail, they have to be taken into consideration. So as far as Medina Sharif is concerned, we can go on and on for the whole year and all our lives. No one can do justice. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala chose him as the last of all his messengers. The first thing that Allah ta'ala created was the noor of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. And no person can really understand that how in a lifespan of about 23 years of Nubuwat, and of those 23 years that was of Nubuwat, because of his 63 years of life, the 23 years of Nubuwat, that is when he was informed of his Nubuwat, of his prophethood. Of course, he was created by Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala to be the last messenger. But from the time that he was given the information, in 23 years to discuss every aspect of a person's life, to give detailed explanation with regards to eating, drinking, marrying, talaq, buying, selling, namaz, roza, zakat, hajj, stories of the nations of the past, what were the causes of the rise and the causes of the decline, and every aspect that you can think of. People are writing volumes and volumes on just one hadith of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. So it was nothing but a miracle. So as far as this Hajj is concerned, as I said, let's get to one or two things about Hajj. The Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had mentioned the mafhum of the hadith sharif as towards the latter times, towards the close of Qiyamah, people will undertake the Hajj. But as far as the very rich, they will undertake the pilgrimage just for tourism. It will be nothing but just tourism, how we visit a place and come back and thereafter report on what a beautiful sight and scenery we had. In the same way, it will be more or less tourism. That spirit of Hajj is not going to be there. How we go to see London, Paris and other tourist attractions of the world, in that way Hajj is also going to become like a tourist attraction. Therefore we can see at present that it is also marketed many a times as a tourism business. Of course, when the person is there, if he makes sincere tawbah from all his sins, it's a different thing. So those people will undertake it as tourism. The middle class, it will be for business reasons. We can see that now Makkah Sharif, Madinah Sharif, the Arab world has opened up their doors for business. So we as South Africans or people from other part of the world also will say, well, that's the best place now to do business. So our going and comings will also be for no other purpose but business reasons. Of course, again, you must keep that in mind, that it is not haram at all to do business. What I am saying is that if the person is going for business reasons, then he must make it very clear that I'm going for business. Then he mustn't say I'm going for Hajj and make everybody believe that he's truly going for Allah Ta'ala's pleasure to undertake pilgrimage. He must say I'm going for business reasons, that's all. And then by the way, it's an opportunity and he's making Hajj also, so he will be honest and truthful in what he has said. But here what we are referring to, or what this Hadith Sharif refers to, is those people who will say that we are going there for Hajj, we are going there for nothing but Hajj. But back of their minds will be nothing but business. How much can we make? What investments can we make? And it will carry on like that. Then the ulama, the learned people, the scholars of Islam and Deen, they will go there for no other purpose except show business, riya. Maulana so and so made so many Hajj, not one he missed in the past 50 years. Maulana so and so made so many Hajj, not one he missed in so many years. And then they will brag about it, we made so much of Hajj, so much of Hajj. So those will be learned, those will be scholars. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam says towards the latter part, many of them will be making Hajj for no other reason except show. And the very poor, they are going to go there for no other purpose except to beg. Now this does not mean that the rich must not make Hajj, the very rich must not make Hajj, and the scholars must not make Hajj, or even those people who are poor but somehow they make it, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala conveys them there, so they must not make Hajj. It doesn't mean that. We have to understand everything and put everything in its proper perspective. What it means that we must make Hajj, the rich must make, the very rich must make, and those people who can afford it must make, and the scholars must make, everybody must make. But the intentions must be very, very clear. What are they undertaking this pilgrimage for? For all the rewards are going to be dependent on that intention. If their intention is correct, they'll get reward of Hajj. And if the intention is not right, they will not get any rewards. So one of the highlights of Hajj, and we can't go into all details of every other aspect now, but everyone knows that one of the highlights of Hajj is Arafat. Or that is a farz, it's a rukun. Without Arafat, there's no Hajj. Even those people who are sick and ailing, those people are in hospitals, some kind of arrangement is made so that they may pass through Arafat so that they can also accomplish this duty of Hajj. They are taken through there. Such an important rukun it is. And everyone knows that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam in his last pilgrimage, Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had a gathering of plus minus 124,000 people there, as we discussed last night also, that no congregation in the world will ever match that congregation that was before Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam in Arafat. For each and every one of them were his companions, very, very pious, very blessed, very fortunate people. Even if their gaze just fell on Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, and they didn't even meet him, they didn't sit in his talk or discussion or waz or nasihat, but they just saw him from a distance. If a person saw him, he became a sahabi of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, if he passed away again as a Muslim. And his status is greater than all the awliya of the time, past, present and future put together. They can't reach the status of the lowest sahabi. So all know about the Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, that gathering that was before him, and that farewell khutbah and bayan and talk that he gave there. But I'm not going in that direction. The point that I wish to get across to you in this short time now is this question of, on Arafat, what did Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam do? Besides everything else, but what was it in which the most amount of his time was spent? Look at the books of his history. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, from Zuhr till Maghrib, he was engaged in dua. Nabi alayhi salatu wa salam, masoom, sinless Nabi. No sin of any kind. Pure, perfect. The greatest after Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. The universe would not have been created if he was not created. And he is engaging in dua and he is crying before Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala from Zuhr till Maghrib. Because there you combine the two salat. The Zuhr and Asr salat is combined with certain conditions. So the Asr namaz was already performed. So there was no Asr namaz also in between. Now can you imagine a person standing from Zuhr till Maghrib? And there is no fear on him of any kind of azab, any kind of punishment. But he is shedding tears before Allah. For whom was he shedding those tears? Who was it that he was concerned about? Those companions of his were already there, ready and prepared. They were now going to be sent out to the different parts of the world to go and convey this message. They were going to be true ambassadors of Islam. There was nothing but perfection in their lives also. So there was no question of any kind of concern about them also. It was this ummah that was supposed to come till the day of Qiyamah. People like us who were going to come after him. Long, long after him. So all the warnings that were given and all the glad tidings that were given and all those prayers that were made was in reality for us. So this question of dua in Arafat, it is mentioned that if a person on Arafat believes that he is not forgiven, then that's a sin itself. Allah Ta'ala calls the person and makes him make dua in Arafat. Now if he is there and he's got great doubts whether he's going to be forgiven or not, then that itself is a sin. That means the sins that he has committed, Allah Ta'ala is prepared to forgive on the plains of Arafat. Like no other place in the world. And at no other time. Because it is mentioned that shaitan, looking at the forgiveness of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala on the day of Arafat, he gets so dejected, so feels so humiliated and so ashamed that all his life's efforts are getting destroyed. That he made the person commit so much of sins and now this person is sincerely repenting on Arafat. Of course, long before reaching Arafat, he should have already made plenty of istighfar, tawbah and repented. But then what is that repentance? Is the person just shedding tears there on Arafat to return in the same condition? Look at the world at large and look, count the number of people that have made Hajj in our congregation here, or go to the other congregations around the country and other parts of the world on this day of Jumu'ah and tell the people to raise their hands how many have made Hajj in their lifetimes. Millions have made Hajj, millions. But yet look at our state. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, 124,000 made Hajj with him. And look at what difference it made to the world at large. After their Hajj, what they carried from there to the parts of the world. Their character, their akhlaq, their morals, their behavior, their etiquette. Their dealings were such that people came into Islam looking at their dealings. Such honesty, such truthfulness. Wallah, it shocks us, especially these days. We just can't seem to find that honest trader, that truthful trader, that honest merchant, or that honest client, that honest customer, that honest buyer, that honest dealer and seller. Everywhere there is nothing but just cheating, deceiving. It's like a survival of the fittest kind of thing. It's like a jungle out there. Vicious animals are roaming around, ready to devour anybody that they can devour. That is our condition. And especially if the person is poor and that person does not have some kind of voice and some kind of authority, or he does not have that kind of financial muscle to take the person to court, then that person is definitely going to be devoured. Talking about the majority of. Unfortunately, this has become the condition. And that is what Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam predicted also. I always say there was a time when you could deal with anybody and everybody and say, well, any Muslim that you are going to deal with, you'll find him an honest person. And today if you see him in the garb of a Muslim, especially if he's seen in the garb of a Muslim, and there's outward signs of piety, outward signs, then they say he must investigate more. Because he could be using his outward sign of piety to deceive and cheat. Now is that an ambassador of Islam? So Hajj has been made by millions, but then what do we carry from Arafat? Yet Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala on the day of Arafat, he says, look at these people, they have come to me with disheveled hair. His hair is scattered and disheveled. Their garment is dust laden. Their bodies are covered with dust. And their call is labbaik Allahumma labbaik. Labbaik la sharika laka labbaik. Innal hamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk la sharika lak. If we have to just go into a discussion of this labbaik itself, what it is. When those sahaba kiram said labbaik Allahumma labbaik, oh Allah, we are present, we are present, we are at your service, what did they do after that labbaik? Here we make labbaik and straight away we are casting lustful glances this side, that side, and then gossiping and making ghibat and backbiting and carrying tales and taking all the stories and gossip of South Africa and other parts of the world back into Arafat and other parts of the world, Mina and Arafat, Muzdalifa, and then the complaints and everything else that goes with it. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala says that look at these people, they have come with disheveled hair, their garments are soiled with dust, their bodies with dust. I'm giving you an explanation. And their call is also labbaik, Allahumma labbaik, we are present, O Allah. In other words, any hukam of yours, any order of yours, therefore if you look at Hajj, it is to show us that we must become obedient to Allah Ta'ala and submit ourselves. Don't use our intellect there too much. Most of the things that are done there is not going to appeal to the senses of a person who does not have love and ishq of Allah and His Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Otherwise they will say, what is all this? We go to the masjid, we are told must go with clean clothes. We must make miswak. Our clothes must not be such that it causes offense to the other musallis. That means if it is perspiration or anything else, apply itar, do something, but go clean, go neat to the masjid. It's a house of Allah Ta'ala. And here the person is going into Arafat, and there he is going, but he's not allowed to clip his nails anymore in ihram. He's not allowed to apply itar anymore in ihram. The person is not allowed to start combing his hair and oiling his hair there. Everyone in just one garb, reminding him of death that is going to come. The kafan garb he wears and goes. That is what he wears and goes. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala says that their call is also labbaik. Allahumma labbaik. He makes the angels witnesses that I have forgiven them all. That even if their sins were more than the grains of sand on earth, even if their sins were more than the raindrops that pour and come down from the heavens, even if their sins were more than the trees that grow on the earth, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala says that I have forgiven them all. So the sins are forgiven. Meaning at that time when the person is making sincere tawbah, his sins are forgiven. That why did he commit that sin? So that part of it is forgiven. But it means that this person must now go in the direction of the tawbah. That means from Arafat now or long before that, or even before he leaves for Hajj. And even if the person is not leaving for Hajj, you and I, each and every one of us have to do that. That sincere tawbah. That means Allah Ta'ala forgives the sin, but after that the person now must return to whomsoever whatever is due. Payment of debts is so important that if the person has to die, a shaheed also, he will be questioned about his debts. Rights of people that have been trampled, ask for forgiveness. Yes, the person made extreme effort to pay those debts. His house got burned, his business went flat due to unforeseen circumstances. He was not playing the game of insolvency. One is playing the game of insolvency. Genuinely, he went into difficulties and he tried his level best during his lifetime to pay those debts. He cut down on all his unnecessary expenditure and his lavish lifestyle. Whatever he had as surplus, he made sure that he sold and paid. Then on the day of Arafah and Qiyamah day also, if he has to pass away, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala will pay out to those people who he could not pay in his lifetime. But provided he is of that category, not the one who wants to enjoy a lifestyle and make people sing for their monies. But that is one part only. But what about inheritance? What about this and all other issues? So Arafat, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala forgives them all. Then we say, then why? After being on Arafat and Allah Ta'ala promising the acceptance of the du'as of everybody on Arafat, and as I just stated, millions of people have made the Hajj and they have gathered on Arafat and from there they dispersed to the different lands. Then why the du'as are not being accepted? By now all problems should have been solved. Palestinian problem solved. Chechnya, Bosnia, Kashmir, Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, Somalia, Sudan and any part of the world, all problems would have been solved. The Muslim Ummah should have been one, united, body and soul. In homes there should have been peace and happiness and security and comfort and everything else. Because these are the things that are promised by Allah Ta'ala Himself. So many millions made dua, so many millions made tawaf, so many millions made everything. Why is no real change coming in our own lives and the lives of people around the globe? And why are the problems increasing instead of decreasing? So that example comes again in my mind, and I said always that if it comes, even if you have heard it many times, but I believe that there must be some benefit for myself or somebody. Because it worries us sometimes that great, great people, pious people, awliya of the time have gathered in Arafat and they are crying before Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, then why is the problem not going? So that simple example is that if a person has got a son and that son is disobedient to the father and the father kicked him out of the house because of his total disobedience and rebellion. Now everybody goes to the father and says that forgive your son, forgive your son. So the father says, I'm prepared to forgive my son right now. But only thing, tell my son to say I'm sorry, I apologize, I made a mistake, I will not repeat. Now when they go to the son says, why do I have to do that? I've got enough money, I've got a nice car, I've got a good home, I've got everything going. What must I worry about my father? Am I in need of him and his wealth and property? So will that father ever forgive, even though the million people go and tell that father that forgive your son? But if this is the reaction of the son, will that father forgive? By way of example, analogy. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is prepared to forgive the entire ummah and change the condition and bring prosperity in their lives, happiness, security, comfort, best of dunya, best of akhirat. But Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, everybody is praying to Him, Ya Allah, forgive the ummah, forgive the ummah, forgive the ummah. Open the doors of maghfirat and mercy for the ummah. But when the ummah is told that get rid from your lives and from your homes of all those things that are displeasing to Allah Ta'ala, they say, why should we get rid of it? Let them make dua for us. Why should we change our lives? What are we short of? We got a good home, we got a good car, we got the biggest television set on the land. And without making our namaz, roza, zakat, hajj, and without being honest and truthful, we're still making a lot of money. And we are dancing and singing and enjoying the rave clubs and discos and cinemas and theatres and drugs. Then what is the need to change? There's no need to change. So then don't change. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, He will accept the du'as of the person who will make sincere tawbah for himself. Allah Ta'ala will accept and change his life and bless him with the best. Give him sukoon in his life, give him happiness, give him prosperity, give him everything. But for those people that he is making du'a, if they don't want to change, they don't want to say, oh Allah, we are sorry, we made a mistake in our lives, you are forgiving, you are merciful, you are kind. We're not going to return to those sins again. Make us of your pious and righteous servants. Bless us with the best of dunya and akhirat. If they're not going to say that, will Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala then thrust it down their throats? Allah Ta'ala can change conditions by forcing it. But He doesn't do that. He gives us the willpower generally. That we must make the choice. We have the willpower to make the choice. We want to go right or we want to go to left. As I explained and I conclude, that if the person has got his indicator, he's going right, then we know that he's going right. If he's going left, then he puts it left, we know he's going left. But if he's put sometime right, sometime left, sometime right, sometime left, then the person behind him also is confused. He doesn't know which side this person is going. May Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala give us all the tawfiq of amal. May Allah Ta'ala make the Hajj of all those that are going and are already there maqbool, mabroor, asan, easy, remove all obstacles, accept the tawaf, ziyarat, ibadat and duas, and give us also a share in the duas that they make there in Arafat, Mina, Muzdalifa and other places. May Allah remove the difficulties, hardship, pain and suffering of mankind around the globe, and especially the ummah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam.